I'm so glad you could join us. This is really special. Laura came all the way from San Diego, flew with her own legs and arms flapping through the air, and landed in the barrio. It's a treat. Have you met Yoshiko and Judy and Carolyn? Wendy?
Yes.
And
these are all familiar faces. Mm-hmm. To Laura. The cook of Carolyn and driven with Judy and fetched Yoshi and cook with Ellie.
That's the nice part of the San Diego situation, that it's like we're down there and you're up here in some kind of way. And I get to sit with them once a month, the group. And that gets recorded also, so the recordings go back and forth as well. Well, we'll find out. I thought so, but we'll see. This is our celebration of Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment. This whole last week, or really the week before, from 1st through 8th, millions of people were sitting zazen day after day and night after night. Very, very intense, and it's so inspiring to think even the possibility of enlightenment is so encouraging. It's not a hopeless situation, even though we are subdued and hurt by so many different things. Still, in the midst of our life, the notion of enlightenment endures, not as a goal, but as a reality. The truth of things. The interesting thing is that when Buddha first experienced the pain of life, the suffering of life, he saw it in others. He was so protected, he didn't really have any experience of sickness, much less dying, much less old age, much less death. And so those initial experiences were revelatory for sure, shocking. Then he saw somebody who looked different from everybody else, just had a different aspect. And when he asked about it, he was told that that person was practicing. He was a yogi. And that's what inspired Buddha to leave home. He came back. Sometimes people get upset because he abandoned his wife and child, but actually the wife and child were perfectly safe with the whole very complicated and supportive family, so it wasn't like he left them to starve somewhere. And he did come back and brought them into what he had discovered. A few weeks ago, I got to pretend to be his stepmother. And ever since then, I've felt so close to that whole situation. I feel like they were real live people. And whether she actually begged Buddha's permission before she died, I don't know. But I actually doubt. I doubt that she had to go and ask somebody for permission to die. She was a very strong woman and a very, very fine teacher. So Buddha saw something, and that led him into the forest and into, well, first to a couple of teachers with whom he was very successful in the practice, but always found something missing. Maybe the way we would find something, or I would find something missing in Carl Jung's work. You know, he just goes so far, but there's something not quite there yet. And so then he went into the forest after feeling that he needed more work of some kind. He didn't know what. And spent 6 years abusing his body, trying to transcend the body life in order to achieve nirvana, the complete burning out of everything. And when he finally gave up, he gave up and immediately met somebody. He just was so on the edge of starvation that a woman carrying something with her, yogurt or milk or something, gave him something to eat and saved his life. And then he sat down and met himself. And that practice has carried down all these years, these 1,000, 2,000 years. When we think about it, it's a really remarkable way that his experience under the tree, meeting himself over and over in the form of Mara, all the aspects of human life that we're born with, the boiling of our brain and our gut that leads us to lust for things and hate things and want power over things in ways that are extremely self-involved. Extremely focused on the self. And over he saw what was in him. Until I suspect he felt there wasn't really anything left except the seeing itself. So when he looked up and saw, he met the star, probably a planet, maybe Venus, which shines in our sky now, very bright, very, very present right here. And meeting that star, he said, all beings are enlightened with me, like me, as me. And then, as we know, instead of responding to the heavens, where he'd been yearning for, he defended himself by touching the earth. He said, the earth gives me the right to do this. The ground itself. As a legacy, I think this is one of the most important parts of the story of Buddha's enlightenment. That it's not a heavenly story, it's not a spiritual story in the sense of some kind of fancy, fabulous experience. Even though the earth shook and there were rainbows and all of those things in the story, because it couldn't be a story without it. But even those are earth-based. The thunder and the lightning, the rivers, from which we are, of which we are, this earth. And this earth of the galaxy of the universe, in which each one of us is, in our onlyness. And in which each one of us meets the whole of us moment by moment. So when Buddha got up and decided that he could share, or at least try to share with his old friends what had happened, and walked a long, long, dusty way to find them, that too was a meeting. Where they, at first, tried to turn him away because he had abandoned the practice. He wasn't going to starve himself anymore. He was going to be decadent and eat things. But then they noticed that he was changed. And that he had something to share. And that meeting, so long, long ago, is the meeting that we continue all the way till now. Even in a Quaker meeting house in San Jose, California, even in in the mountains of Nepal, even in Jakarta, even all over the world, this meeting which allows the self of the self to meet. Where having forgotten the self is met. Meeting a star, you could say. We don't have to be something in particular, but just allow being to flourish. We talk about hand to hand and knee to knee and elbow to elbow, how we practice as Sangha. And how this practice is conveyed is so mysterious. In the transmission of light, there's a little story where a monk is being tested by a teacher. Yao Shan is being tested by Baizhang and isn't getting anywhere. He just is in his head so much. And finally Baizhang asks him what his original teacher had said. And Yao Shan tells a little story. He said, well, my original teacher came in and was supposed to give a talk. And he sent his, instead he just bowed to everybody and sent everybody out the door again. And as they went through the door, he called out and he said, what is it? And they all turned their heads. And Baizhang said, oh, well, you didn't get it, but I've met your teacher, even though it's 1,000 miles away. Earthbound as we are, we're not limited by the earth. Earthbound as we are, mind itself has no limitation. And so as we meet, we carry each other as we go. As we recognize each other, our world widens and widens and has more and more possibility. There's more we can do. Because although there are so many words by now having been written about this practice, it's a practice of activity. It's a practice of service. It's a practice of doing. It's a practice of showing up. And although we don't have anything to say about how we show in the world, what we look like, because we really don't know. We really have no idea. Still, if we practice, the practice shines. Not in our control, but as a kind of expression of the whole. I don't think Buddha was the very first person to ever have this experience. It's the story that we've inherited because of the causes and conditions that happened in India that brought all things together in this one life. It all happened before there was even writing. Several hundred years before there was even writing. So what we've inherited, we don't know for sure. But the experience itself, Coben always said it went back to the cavemen. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised. He said if people are waiting in the bushes for a tiger or something, that you have to wait a long time, and sitting for a long time has its effect on the mind and the body. So it's not so special in that way. It's a natural thing, even though now it seems like a very odd thing to be doing. When I meet people in my neighborhood who ask me what I do, I tell them, and they say, oh, I need some of that, but I couldn't do it. I could never do that. Even though the beauty of this practice is anybody can do it. Anybody. You don't have to be smart or pretty, or handsome, or rich. You don't have to belong to something. You just have to sit down on the earth and be willing to meet ourselves and to meet everyone else. That was Buddha's gift to us. So Rohatsu just means the 12th month. Meeting on the 12th. Ro is 12, right?
I think there's something about the 8th day.
8th day of the 12th month.
Yeah. A lunar month.
Somebody told me that was what it was, yeah. But what do I know?
Well, I read it last week, or whenever it was, I was sending out the announcement.
Well, lucky we. Here we are. Questions, discussion, additions and subtractions. Yoshiko.
when I think about enlightenment by Buddha, I imagine it's something extraordinary and
yeah.
and like out of reach for me. And so when you say you just meet yourself by sitting, self of self, and that's what Buddha transmitted?
Yes.
I'm not sure whether I understand it. Like meeting the just flourishing myself in this body, in this moment, and whatever. I feel like I'm not out of my small self.
Oh, you're not. And in many ways, you're a mess as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, in our ignorance, we tend to try not to notice. That we try to bypass all the bad parts of ourself and present ourselves as something special and believe that that is me and I'm not all that other stuff. I'm just this. And what Buddha did was to sit down and say to look and see or be shown in the story that he was very selfish, that he was very power-driven. He wanted to rule the earth. He wanted $1 million. He wanted as many women as he could get his hands on, blah, 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 like that. And each time these things came up, he saw it and could accept it and not be driven by it, not be lived by that aspect of his life, but see it as human being and hold it as human being. Now, he called it Mara, kind of devil, but he met Mara over and over in his life. He didn't just get all perfect. He kept the knowledge of his limitation as well as the bigger knowledge of how big his self was in spite of his limitations.
The big self was the past.
The big self is present moment. His connection with the star and with all beings everywhere. That's how big we are. We're connected to everything. We breathe with everything. We live and die with everything. That's how big we are.
Sometimes I don't want to watch the news.
Oh, me too. It's awful.
Like whatever is happening over the other side of the earth is a part of me, and it's hard to be with.
Have to remember that that's not the only thing that's happening. I was saying last week, I heard that Mr. Rogers, the television kitty teacher, said his mother always told him to remember that whatever bad situation was, they're always helpers. There's always somebody out there helping. So I think it's always true. Whether it's getting better or getting worse, we don't know. And it seems like a mistake to hope for better if we don't know. It's more equanimous, more even-minded to simply embrace the whole of it and remember that what we read in the paper isn't all of it at all. It's what we need to know in order to help as much as we can. But if we can't help, maybe read once a week, just one time, every now and then, and not all the time being flooded with all this. It just turns into garbage after a while. It's too much. Too much of the dark side and not enough of the light. It's a real good question.
The Buddha not being the first one to have this experience. It reminded me of another old story. The Buddha, one of his teachings, when he talks about, he says that he avows that this is not his invention or his truth. He says, it's when I was walking in the woods, it's as if I came across an old path that led to an ancient city. And I went there, and I stayed there, and I found, this is what I found, that this is possible for human beings. So that's one of the stories of how he talked about the path, the following the path, which of course includes the paramitas, the paramis, and sometimes I think that's very helpful to remember. Thank you for bringing that up, that he's not, it wasn't, and it kind of fit in with what Yoshiko was saying about how we all feel like, there's this figure who, you know, he saw that, but we can't protect. In that story, he's saying, we just follow that way. And recreate that way just by being here today. We're doing that.
There's a childhood story too where he remembers finally in his suffering and in yogi practice, he remembers when he was a child sitting under a rose apple tree and how peaceful he felt. And he thought, oh, maybe I could just sit down under a tree and feel peaceful for a little while. And that was the beginning of this set. And in our list of ancestors, there are five Buddhas before Shakyamuni Buddha, just as going back to deeply ancient times. Nobody knows who those Buddhas were. They just stand for all the other ones. but we're all still in touch with them. That we wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for their practice. It's a living thing, and it's living in us through them. That's how big the mind is.